Hi, this is Michael Gill from Maker Minions, and you're listening to Codeless. And so 2007 to 2017, about a 10-year stretch, that's what I did. I ran my agency and we built software for all types of companies. Yeah, so if I'm grabbing a beer with other developer friends of mine, I remind them that a lot of us were using no-code tools way back when. Your customer, your end user has a problem, and you're trying to bring a pain reliever to them. That's the solution. The tools just help you get there faster. The most insane automation in the book is actually the book itself. As that continues to grow on that side, and the no-code tools kind of continue to grow on the visual development side, right in the middle of that is going to be the developer who can pull those two worlds together.
It's hard to know someone or about something if you don't take the time to focus on asking the right questions. Oftentimes, what you think is a routine conversation or subject you already know ends up uncovering a whole lot more insight than you bargained. That's what it feels like working in no code. And it also summarizes this interview with Atlanta maker Michael Gill, who I like to call the Automation King. This interview with Gill is nothing less than a magician revealing the secrets behind the tricks they perform. I know it's somewhat sacrilegious for a magician to do so, but in no code, it's totally cool for a maker to reveal his tricks because we grow off of these secrets. It's even more significant when the no code maker given the secrets is also a professional software developer. Gill does a great job bringing the best of both worlds, code and no code, straddling the line of all that matters, which is effective product development that eliminates a customer's pain point. He also gives kudos to some other awesome no code makers who inspired him with their iterative MVP attitude. We discuss a lot of things, including his Maker Minions ebook, which comes out tomorrow, April 11th, 2020. Go to makerminions.com to grab your copy. As usual, we're going to cue Gill up with an intro and roll right into the interview. Enjoy.
Hey, what's up, everyone? My name is Michael Gill, and I'm an entrepreneur, a CTO, and a no-code advocate. I'm based in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm the creator of No Code Coffee, the co-founder of Cuppa, and the author of Maker Minions. Cuppa is a social platform that makes it ridiculously easy to connect with people from your favorite internet communities over online video chats. Maker Minions is my new ebook that includes 101 automations for makers, side hustlers, and entrepreneurs.
Hey, Gil, welcome to Codeless, man. It's so cool to have you. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So we run in the same circle with this Atlanta No Code Meetup 0 to 1. And so I see you all the time, but having you on the podcast is really cool because we get to share you with the rest of the world. To me, you're Gil, but you're also the Automation King. So I'd like everyone listening to get ready to be subjected literally to the Automation King. So Gil, starting out, we always ask everyone coming onto the show, how do you introduce yourself?
Sure. So I would say I'm a developer by trade. I got my start just out of college, taught myself development, and then got a job working at an ad agency in LA and learned the ropes there of how to do client work. From there, I started my own agency, and I did a wide array of things from graphic design to web development to 3D animation, but definitely fell in love with software. And so 2007 to 2017, about a 10-year stretch, that's what I did. I ran my agency and we built software for all types of companies. Then I got an opportunity to be a CTO for an enterprise SaaS company in 2017 and took that opportunity on. And still doing that today, but found the no-code world a couple months ago and kind of fell headfirst into it.
Wow, that's interesting. So for the listeners, this is brand new, but I didn't know all that about you. I always talk about experience like lasagna. I mean, your layers are like whoa, like, so yeah. You got developer, advertising, ad agency, graphic design, and then now into no code. So I got to ask you, like, how did you make this transition walking into no code, and what's it like?
Sure. So one thing that I've learned even just in the recent months as I've found no code and was trying to figure out my place in it is that I'm definitely a storyteller. I get an idea in my head and then I want to build a story around it. But I like to build products. I want to put products out in the world. And really, software development was a tool that I found to help me do that. It was a way that I could build products and get them out into the world using my own skills instead of needing to rely on other people. But once I found the no-code world and realized that I don't have to write everything from scratch with code and I can use existing tools to do that, I found a faster way to get my products out to the world. So that's really what it's been to me.
So hold on. Like, your developer brothers would call that cheating now. When you're at a bar or you're just hanging out with your developer buddies, how do you square that?
Yeah, so if I'm grabbing a beer with other developer friends of mine, I remind them that a lot of us were using no-code tools way back when. I mean, 10 years ago, we were building apps and sites for clients in WordPress and shipping it out to them and having them think that we were coding it from scratch. We weren't always. If we got a deadline and wanted to cut corners, we were building in WordPress. Wow. And yeah.
Sounds like a magician.
A little bit, I guess.
All right. Let's talk about some magic you're doing. I mean, look, your automation game is fire. You have a newsletter. Everyone that's listening should know about it, but if not, please introduce them.
Sure. Yeah, so I would say automation is definitely my passion within the world of not just no code, but software development in general. Even back in college, logic and argumentation has always been a passion of mine, and I've always been pretty good at it. So I enjoy the logic that goes into building automation workflows. And again, when I see tools, I see a way to pull them all together and hack the system and do something that nobody else is really doing. So for me, no code is like a green field, a wide open pasture of just all these automation opportunities.
So I was talking to a developer today, and there's a presumption in a developer's mind in the sense of the tool is the solution, but you're kind of looking at like pencils in a cup, and you're just like, it's just different tools, and no code is just another one.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They're all tools that you can use to solve a problem. And the solution is really the pain reliever, right? Your customer, your end user has a pain, a problem, and you're trying to bring a pain reliever to them. That's the solution. The tools just help you get there faster.
Wow, that's cool. Love that. Especially even love having you in our group. I got to let everyone know, when you joined, our whole game, it just went up a whole notch, because not only were we starting to think about how we were serving the customer, but especially with regards to like things like automation, I never knew you could automate the things you do. So let's start with the projects that people know you for right now, especially on Twitter.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm the creator of No Code Coffee, which is a daily no code newsletter. And each day in your inbox, you get three simple things. You'll get introduced to one new no code tool that will help you build products without using code, a new no code maker, somebody who's out there building products and showing what you can do with these tools, and then also a new no code product, something that was built without code. So you sign up for No Code Coffee, you get this in your inbox every day, and I've had a lot of fun doing it, but a daily newsletter is a lot of work. And so very early on, I decided that I needed to figure out how to automate it. And so I built an Airtable base that I decided was going to house all of my content and all of my links and features, and built all my automation around that.
What made you start a newsletter? Like, where did that come from?
That's a great question. I have to give that credit to Jens Lennartsen. A lot of you probably know him. He's on Twitter. He's like the rock star no code marketing guru. And he was one of the first people that I saw on Twitter. He puts out a lot of content, and it's very compelling content. He talks a lot about the power of a newsletter and a mailing list. And so in listening to him, I took one of his workshops and decided that if I was going to find my space in no code, I needed to be putting out content like a newsletter.
Wow, that newsletter is rich. I mean, I drink that cup of coffee every day. And sometimes, honestly, you know what? I don't save them, but in some ways I go back, because sometimes I'll read a newsletter and I won't realize the power of the tool until like I go back and see it again. And I'm like, oh, I can use this 3D animation tool to do X and whatever. How is the newsletter doing? What are you seeing in terms of like metrics, conversions, and things like that?
Yeah, it's done fantastic, honestly. I mean, the launch was kind of crazy. Got a much bigger response than I was expecting for somebody who hadn't released anything before. And so I got about 600 signups in the first day or so, and then got to 2,000 subscribers in the first week or so. And now at just about 2,500 subscribers, very happy with my open and click rates. I've got around 41, 42% open rate and about a 10 or 11% click rate.
Wow, that's amazing. That's high. I mean, some nonprofits can't even get that. So talk to us about the newsletter. It's automated. I'll put a link in the show notes to the tutorial on how you automate your newsletter, but can you just give us like a 3-minute cliff note on how it's done and exactly what automating a newsletter is like?
Sure. So I'll start by saying I'm not a writer by trade. I certainly don't enjoy it. I wouldn't call it a hobby or anything. I know a lot of people that do enjoy writing and can do it well. For me, it's a chore, but if you're going to have a newsletter, it's kind of table stakes. So I built my automation around that to a large degree. And then I also wanted to remove repetitive processes. So the actual act of going into a tool like MailChimp or MailerLite and opening up a new email and then having to copy and paste all of your new content, even if you're using an existing template, that alone takes time. So what I did was I set it up so that if I'm in Google Chrome and I'm on the web and I see something I want to feature, I use the Airtable Web Clipper to save it into my Airtable base. And then what I do is I have a chat bot actually that asks me different questions about the link that I saved. And so if it's a tool, it's going to ask me what the tool is used for and who's a ideal user for it. If it's a no-code maker, it'll ask me what kind of projects they're working on or what did I find interesting about them. And it's very conversational, this chatbot. But as I talk to this chatbot about these links that I've saved, it saves that and actually uses it to build the story that gets featured in my newsletter. And then all of that gets assembled into the format that I've got set up. And it builds it and schedules the newsletter every day. And I just have to make sure I keep content in my Airtable base.
Wow, that's just dope. I want to talk about a couple other projects you're working on, but you have a venture fund?
Yes, so it's actually called Codeless Ventures.
That's no interesting.
No direct affiliation to this podcast, but definitely, obviously, we bonded through our ATL maker scene here.
Cool. How are you involved in no code with Codeless VC?
Yeah. So my whole goal with Codeless Ventures is I want to bring a lot of resources and access and just spotlight to people that are building great products using no code tools. A lot of the interest and even some of the early VC money that's starting to be talked about is really focused on people that are building no code tools. And I want to focus on the products and really highlight and lift up people that are building just amazing products that are great because they're solving problems and helping the world, not because, oh, look what I built without using code. So that's the goal of Codeless Ventures. And the first thing that I've done with it is I'm sponsoring the No Code Rumble, which is featuring 8 makers that are building amazing projects around the world.
That's really cool. Your addressable market for Codeless Ventures. That's very, very interesting. You're talking about people actually building businesses on no code and supporting those founders in that process.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I want to offer a little bit of what you would see in a typical accelerator, where they may already know how to build a product. They may already know what tools they're going to use, but they need a lot of support and resources around, okay, once you've built your product, how do you market it? How do you build a business around it? How do you make sure that you build out a roadmap for success for yourself with this product?
There's a lot of cool stuff coming out of Atlanta and no code, man. What else are you working on right now that we see on Twitter?
So I'm working on Maker Minions, which is my new ebook, which comes out on April 8th. And it is a collection of 101 automations for makers, side hustlers, and entrepreneurs.
Where will people be able to get that?
So I haven't set up the site yet, but it will be at makerminions.com. That'll be the landing page for the book, and that'll take you to my storefront where you can buy the book and download it.
I'm looking forward to that. So just getting back into Maker Minions, what's the goal you have for that?
Sure. So my goal with Maker Minions is really to equip people with the knowledge and the know-how to build automations and build a business on it. Really, I want to be able to educate everybody on how easy it is to set up these automations, but then also what the value of it is, whether it's better business practices and really enabling yourself to operate like you're a much bigger business than you are. Keep your overhead low by having this army of automated robots that I call minions doing a lot of the work for you. Or it could be consistency. When you're an indie maker or a startup founder, you're usually running to the biggest fire, right? And so if you're focusing 1 week on growth, you may be dropping the ball on your customer support or things like that. And so this is a way to make sure you build a system of automations that make sure you're consistent in everything that you do, and you just have to build the workflow around it.
What's an amazing automation that you'll have in the book that just impossible and ridiculous to have right now?
The most insane automation in the book is actually the book itself. So I have a minion in the book named Maker, and what that minion does is it literally builds the ebook for me. I've got all of my content for the book and all of the links organized in an Airtable base, and Maker actually pulls all of that into a bubble site of all places in a book format and generates the PDF for me. So I think it's pretty insane, but it's a no-code book built without code. I think one that would probably be surprising to people is a way to send physical handwritten notes to either your customers or your prospects every time they perform a certain action. So number one, it's automated. You don't have to remember to send out these notes. But two, it's personalized. And it's three, it's physical. It's an actual card that they get in the mail that looks like it was written by hand by you. And it's actually digitally generated. And it's sent out on a schedule every single time. And you set up what the trigger is for it. So and the example I have in the book is every time someone purchases something from my Shopify or my Gumroad store, they get a handwritten note in the mail saying, hey, thanks for buying this.
I know a lot of makers won't want something like that. A lot of like real estate agents need that. You need to sell that to real estate agents. That's,
that's
amazing.
A great idea.
You're talking about people who rely on frequent communication to build a relationship. And of course, relationships are the basis for a lot of the transactions that happen. So it just makes sense. What else are you working on?
So I also just joined up with KP on Kappa, which is a new social undistancing platform. And it kind of directly addresses a lot of the opportunity around getting people connected while everybody's work from home and restaurants are closed and people can't gather like they used to.
What's in the name Kappa? What does that mean?
So it's Kappa because we're encouraging people to grab a cup of coffee and meet up on a virtual call, a video call with people from their Twitter network. And you'll get randomly matched up with people that you have something in common with. It's kind of a serendipitous matching, and you join up for 30 minutes, grab your favorite cup of coffee or your favorite drink, and get to know some of your Twitter followers or Twitter friends a lot better.
What does the stack look like? So is it code or no code?
So we're building this without code, and it's being built primarily on Bubble. Although, of course, as the automation king, I've got a lot of other tools behind the scenes. And so right now, Integromat is doing some heavy lifting behind the scenes on some automation and Airtable as well.
That's really, really cool to hear. It's also controversial for your software developer buddies, but I'll let you deal with them. I think that's really, really cool that you're leveraging your skill set within no code. So how is your skill set, particularly being that you could have built Kappa with code, is that different, better, or worse? What does that look like?
So the main reason for doing it was speed. We wanted to get a beta version out very quickly. And so Bubble enables you to do that. There's a lot of the administrative setup and things that Bubble does right out of the box that's very quick. I wouldn't rule out building it with different tools later on, specifically on the video conferencing side. That's something that as we scale is going to need a lot more advanced functionality. And so V2, V3, there'll probably be some code involved, but for a V1, we can definitely do all no code tools.
So what stage are you guys in now with Kappa?
So it's in a private beta right now, and it'll be available to more people as we go on. We kind of want to let in another group of people each week until we feel comfortable enough to roll it out to everybody.
Cool. And where do people go to get the private beta access?
So right now you can go to getkappa.io and you can sign up to join the wait list.
I think I'm on the wait list. I can't wait to have a Kappa session. Is there anything else you're working on right now that I haven't mentioned?
Yes. So I'm also working on a platform that allows you to grow your email newsletter audience. So this is a tool specifically for anyone with an email newsletter, but a way to grow your audience through email referrals. So you can set up a referral program. You can have rewards for different tiers, and you can encourage your subscribers to share your newsletter with their networks.
Okay. So you're taking No Code Coffee a step further or even expanding what you've done with that?
Yeah, that's expanding. And again, this is a collaboration with Jens Lennartsen. So a big shout out to him. This was an idea that he came to me with and said, hey, I know a way we can both grow our own newsletters. And oh, by the way, I think a lot of other people in no code and beyond would like this. So we talked about it and he said, how about we turn it into a product? And so that's what we're doing right now.
It's funny how there's this next level after you meet another maker and then you start collaborating with other makers. How is that similar or different to a typical dynamic between software developers? Like, is that common too?
It's different. And I think the reason that it's different is that in this world, you kind of don't have the same relationship of you're the developer, so you'll do all the work. And then I'm the sales mind or the finance mind. And so I'll sit back and wait for you to build it. And then let me know when it's done and I have a product to go sell. It's not really like that in the no code world, because everybody on the team can really get involved. If you have a collaboration, it's much more in real time. You're kind of building together in lockstep, even if one person's taking the lead. It's just much more collaborative than it is in the traditional software world.
I think the idea of you and Jens collaborating, it kind of reminds me of the music industry and like where you have one artist in one genre and another in another genre and they do a song and they kind of cross-pollinate their fan bases.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Moving on. So talking about your partnership with Jens, I also saw something called Champfire. Is that this platform?
That is not. So Champfire is actually something separate. And Jens would probably kill me if I go into too much detail about it. And I do know he listens to your podcast. So I won't give up all the details. But
hold on. Jens listens to Codeless?
I believe so.
Shout out, Jans. What's up?
If he doesn't, he will now.
All right. Oh, okay. All right. So we won't burst the bubble on Champfire on Codeless, but I'm hoping you do come back to talk about it sometime.
Yes.
I really want to get into you, especially because of your unique background, having worked in many different areas of product development and execution. What is a big failure of no code today? Like, what do you notice that's a big drawback right now?
So I would say that there's a lot of focus in no code around the tools, and I understand why. There's a lot of excitement around it. There's a ton of tools that are available, and there's new ones being built every day. It seems like every day there's a new beta that's now available for some tool that people haven't heard of, but is doing something amazing that the current tools aren't. So that builds a lot of energy around the tools. I would like to see more of a focus on how do we just build great products? Like, we know we have the tools now. There's plenty of tools available to us, but there's so many other things that go into building a great product than just the tool. And so that's where I would like to see no code evolve. And I think it is. So I'm excited to see how time helps with that.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. I feel better hearing you say that because it's overwhelming. I'll get comfortable or I'll start learning one platform or a tool. And then all of a sudden, there's another platform that does everything that it does, plus or minus something else. And it's kind of frustrating because if we're focusing on the technical proficiency in no code, then I'll never get anywhere. And one hack I've noticed is really like, I'm not focusing on the tools. I'm copying people that are doing things I want to do. So for example, with like automation, I'm copying you. I just watch whatever you're doing. And then I try to take that into a context of a problem I'm trying to solve for myself. And I copy that. Another person I copy is Bram Canstein. Mm-hmm. I copy the heck out of him. I copy a lot of people. Let me ask you, if you could copy someone in no code, who would you copy?
Shout out to Bram, first of all, because he's actually how I found no code. I don't remember exactly how, but I saw something about no code MVP. I think I was Googling about like MVP strategy and found him. And that's kind of how I got into no code. So I don't know if he's technically in no code, but I would say Peter Levels. The concept of like founding 12 startups in 12 months, or like taking each of my ideas and turning it into a different startup or a different business and doing that over and over, like that to me is the ultimate blueprint for what I would love to accomplish. I've got so many ideas that I know would create so many killer businesses. And if I can find a way to go fast enough, I'm going to get it done. So that's where I'm headed.
Nice. All right. Shout out to Peter Levels. So we're talking about challenges. You said there's a substantial focus on the tools and there are a lot of them. And you want to focus more on kind of the ideas and the principles that get you to build products that solve problems. With respect to that, it seems like you're saying there's a progression before we get there. So how would you define the cycle or the stage we're in right now with no code?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think the stage that we're in right now, everybody is building. They're learning how to take their ideas and turn them into MVPs. And I think that's great. I think that there's a lot of energy and excitement around that and a lot of great MVPs that are getting launched. I think that as we learn more how to get our first 100 users and then our first 1,000 users, that's when we'll start to kind of grow into this next stage where we're ready for a little bit more maturity in no code. So, okay, I got my first 1,000 users. Now I've got a backlog of requests from these first 1,000 users on new features they want me to implement. I've got kind of a daily support pipeline where I have to field support tickets and things like that. I've got a list of maybe bugs that I've got to get fixed. And how do I prioritize all of that, along with trying to evolve the platform and so on? And then things like, how do I market the product? How do I understand product market fit and know which customers to say no to and which customers to go after? That's kind of the next stage that I see, but it will come after we really get everybody to a point where they're able to acquire their first 1,000 users.
Got it. Do you think there's some similarities between the way products are typically built in the developer salesperson kind of dynamic versus now in no code, or is there anything we can learn?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's a lot of value that developers can bring to the no-code space, which is why I'd like to try and get more of my developer friends to bring their value to a lot of the no-code makers. And that has to do with things around security. How do you build a product that's secure and make sure that you're protecting your users' data? It has to do with performance. A lot of times you can be limited by the performance of the no-code tool that you're using, or sometimes even the plan you're on. And so understanding what's available to you in performance with the tools that you have and really what you need to achieve and knowing when you need to pivot. So I think that would be good. And then things around logic. When you're evaluating a no-code tool, as a developer, I feel like I have a hack. Like I know when I'm looking at a tool, I should be able to do X. I should be able to get an array of my users and iterate over that list and do something with them. And so if I'm looking at a tool and it doesn't have that, I know that that's a gap. And so those are things that developers can help no-code makers in learning and becoming a more sophisticated purchaser of no-code tools.
So speaking of ideas, I think we're all idea people. But one big difference, Gil, is that I notice in you is that you actually execute. So my question is this, if the average person can come up with a lot of ideas, let's say they come up with 5 ideas a day, how do you decide on which ideas bubble to the top and actually get to go through to the execution stage? Like, what's the rubric for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So again, looking at what I consider some of the OGs in that space, like Bram, who you mentioned, he has a lot of great resources around prioritizing your ideas and understanding which ones would be good for an MVP. So I use his MVP experiment canvas, and I do that for each of my ideas, and it helps me bucketize them into ones that I think are realistic and ones that aren't. Going through an exercise like that, you can kind of tell early on if your ideas have legs or not. And then another tactic that I do, and this is one that I've picked up from Jens and others, is I've just started talking about my ideas. Like maybe put it out as a tweet and then see if you get any reaction. And if you get some reaction to it and people are kind of interested in the idea, then maybe write a thread about it, make a whole thread and then see what you get. And then maybe you turn that into a blog post or turn it into even an MVP landing page and just see what you get. A little secret of kind of a couple of my approaches, both with No Code Coffee and Maker Minions, is sometimes I just have the idea, build a landing page, and throw it out there and see how many signups you get. Neither of those were actually built when I first put the landing page out, but because I got a certain number of signups, I said, oh, I guess I got to go build it now.
Yeah, that's very counterintuitive because the way the world is set up, most people are taught to like have the perfect solution all set up and ready to go. So thanks for that. Just talking about the tools you use, what's your favorite no-code stack right now? Like if you could make your spaghetti sauce every time, what would be the consistent set of ingredients?
Yeah, that's tough. Because I run this daily newsletter and I'm looking at new tools all the time, like I try to cover as many tools as I can. So each time I build a new product, I try to use a different set of tools than I did before. I want to have that understanding of kind of the landscape. That being said, I've certainly settled into kind of a go-to combination that consists of Bubble, Airtable, and Integromat. Those are kind of a magic combination that I can kind of cover 80% of what I want to build with.
Got it. So Airtable, database, Bubble also has a database, but how does Airtable like add to that or help that?
Yeah, so it depends. A lot of times I will use Airtable because I have a form that I can just throw out even before the Bubble site is ready. I can put an Airtable form out for people to start filling out the form and submitting that way. I also can put up a gallery view from it. And so if the MVP version, I'm using like a card site or some type of landing page, I can embed an Airtable gallery view. And then that buys me time to build the Bubble site. I'm not as fast maybe as some others in building sites in Bubble. So I usually need to buy a little bit of time ahead of the Bubble site being released. And Airtable usually does that for me with some combination with the landing page.
I see. So I love Airtable because of its functionality as a database. But for you, it's not just a database, but it's also like a holding station for you to be able to use that information when you need it.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great way for me to organize my thoughts and even design the data structure that I want, even if I'm going to end up moving it to a bubble database later on. Sometimes just building that first version in Airtable is a great way to understand your data and how you want it to be structured.
Got it. Thank you for mentioning that. You mentioned Integromat. So Integromat is automation, right?
Yes. Yes, it is.
So it competes with stuff like Zapier and what's the other one? Parabola.
Parabola. Mm-hmm.
Why Integromat?
So Integromat to me has a wide variety of tools that it integrates with, which is great for one. But the other reason is a lot of their mechanics around how you build workflows are just kind of superior. It's the easiest tool to me to connect modules together. They have such a great visual presentation of how these modules are connected that it makes it really easy to understand what you're building. And then they've got some neat little things like their explain flow button, which literally shows you like these little bouncing balls that go all the way across your workflow. And if it's iterating, it pops out multiple ones, and it just really visually explains what's happening in your workflow and makes it easy to understand how all these tools are connected.
Okay, I need that. I need that. So I'm definitely going to copy you on that. Thank you for mentioning that. I want to jump into attitudes and just mindset with no code. What has no code changed in you? Has it transformed something in you?
It has. So a couple things. One, it's encouraged me to build out in the open. So to be much more open about what I'm building, to involve more people in it, to ask for feedback, shoot someone a DM on Twitter and say, hey, I'm building this thing. Can you take a look at it? Tell me what you think. The community is just so open and helpful, and everybody wants to be a part of it, and they want to know what you're building, and they want to help you with it, and they want the same in return. So it's a great place to get that validation and feedback, which is just not something I was used to before. When I was running my agency and trying to transition into the world of building my own SaaS products, I was doing it on my own. And so I would build in the dark for 3 months and then try and put something out. And if I didn't get customer feedback, I'd go back, build it for another 3 months or 6 months, and then try to put it out again.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of pain. To a lot of listeners out there, especially if you're a newbie like me, new to no code, one of the biggest things I discovered with our meetup, and this is where I encourage a lot of listeners, if you don't have a meetup or a group of people that you can bounce your ideas off of, you need to find one. But that was the biggest hack for me, because I went from sitting by myself in a room dreaming up these great ideas without actually having a way to validate or iterate on them. So thank you for mentioning that. So talking about no code, there's of course this debate about code versus no code. And you've already highlighted what no code is doing, helping us MVP faster. What's going to happen to, I don't want to call them the legacy players, but what's going to happen to the shops that typically are relying on software developers? Like, what's going to even happen to software developers as no code matures?
I think they're just going to continue to be kind of the biggest resource, the most constrained resource. Right now, there's such a demand still for more and more no-code tools that as a developer, you could be building tools for people for ages. There's going to be no let up in that. And as some of these bigger tools continue to get investment, you'll see a lot more of that happen. But then again, as a developer, there's also a lot of space for you to bring your expertise. I think that even in a no-code world, as the industry starts to mature, you'll see a lot more opportunity for someone with a development background to be brought on as like a technical co-founder or a CTO, even when you're building without code and without no-code tools, because of that expertise that they bring to the table that I mentioned.
Got it. So whether we don't know what will happen to the value of a developer, I think it'll still remain high because there are not enough developers in the world to build everything we want. But my question to you is, are you essentially saying that the utility of a developer is going to go up because they're going to be able to build so many more useful things?
Yes, that's exactly right. They'll be able to build so much more useful things. If there was a stock value for developers, I would say buy now, because it's only going to continue to go up. Something else that I see from a developer perspective is, as a developer, we use a lot of platforms that are infrastructure as a service, like Amazon Web Services, for example. Amazon's really the no-code version of like infrastructure in the software world. So before, when you would have to get an IT person to build out a data center for you and set up servers and all that, now you're dragging and dropping within AWS to do that. And they've even moved more towards like the no-code side, because there's a lot of advanced developer processes and procedures, building databases and things that are literally like click and drag right now. And so as that continues to grow on that side, and the no-code tools kind of continue to grow on the visual development side, right in the middle of that is going to be the developer who can pull those two worlds together.
And not only somewhat easier, but faster, of course, and easier to put into place.
Yeah, faster, easier, and I would say even more critical in that world. Somebody's got to connect those dots. And as soon as that happens, as soon as somebody building in a visual dev drag and drop tool also has the power of like AWS or Google Cloud on the back end, and a developer can connect those two for them, it's game over. I mean,
wow,
it's going to be insane.
That's a scary individual. I'm interested in this, the way you described AWS as an abstraction on data infrastructure. It makes perfect sense. Are there any other facets of the software development industry that you think are being no-coded like an AWS right now?
Yeah, definitely. There's things like Pulumi, which is infrastructure as code. That still requires code, but it is an abstraction layer of that infrastructure that I talked about. If you look at what's happening with React, for example, and Node, two JavaScript libraries that have kind of exploded in the development world, and it's really for the same reasons. They are saving time for developers and allowing them to focus on where they differentiate, right? So if you look at React, for example, there's all of these React components and React libraries that allow a developer to put together a interface that looks like next level, like on par with all of the best software interfaces out there, but they don't have to be a designer necessarily to be able to get things to look exactly the way that they want. So they can focus on where they add value, which is really the business logic that developers are so critical for.
What's the question that I didn't ask you that you wish I had?
Probably, what's a skill that you have, or what's something you're working on that people would be surprised to know? One of my areas of expertise is actually in healthcare technology. And so I have a startup that I'm a part of out in California, actually, and I have a development team that's working on healthcare technology.
Wow. You are like just full of surprises. I did not know this about you. You think you know somebody during your meetup, but then you don't. Gil, you're part of No Code. You're a big part. You're impacting and contributing to a lot of other people. How can the community help you?
Oh, that's a good one. So definitely buy my book, Maker Minions, MakerMinions.com. But in addition to that, I would say keep giving me feedback. One of the favorite things that I love is when somebody replies to my email newsletter and is giving me insight on where they're seeing gaps, things that they wish I would talk about or that others would talk about in their newsletter. I don't want to be repetitive. I don't want to be just another person recycling the same content. I really want to provide a unique viewpoint. But I don't want to be talking to hear myself talk. I'd love to know what people want to know and where the pains are. So just be more vocal and shoot me a DM on Twitter or reply to my newsletter and let me know what your needs are so I can try to help.
All right. One thing I've learned from my listeners is to hack my guest appearances by asking my current guests, who should I invite to CodeList?
That's a good one. That is a good question. Let's see. I would say you should invite Jens.
Okay.
He'd bring a great perspective on marketing.
All right. Good. And Gil, one last thing. You're doing a lot. How can people reach you?
So on Twitter is the best way. I'm at Gil_works. And that's really the best way to reach me. We can connect from there and grab a cuppa. And it'd be great.
Good. Well, listen, Gil, thank you so much for coming on CodeLess to share your perspective, your journey, and your dreams for No Code. It was really, really fun having you. And I look forward to talking more about all the wonderful stuff you're doing.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great being on. I love what you're doing with CodeLess, and just excited to see where you continue to go from here.
Cool. Thank you, Gil. All right. That brings us to the end of this episode, but you should stick around after the closing credits to hear Gil's thoughts on his summary of No Code as well as predictions for the future. Please rate and review us on your favorite listening platform. It helps us get discovered by more people who want to unlock creativity and accelerate transformation. You can reach me on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube through the CodeLess podcast handle. Just search for the words CodeLess and podcast and you can't miss us. All music provided through the appropriate licensing and permissions. Big thanks for the music to Steph Skilly, Bobby Oddsock, RMark1313, Raising Sounds, and prod.nocredit. You can find more information and links in the show notes.
I think no code over the last decade completely shifted the landscape, and it really tipped the scales in favor of the product person. So now if you have an idea, you can build and ship it in an insanely short amount of time, and you no longer have to rely on a developer to get you there. In the next 10 years, I think no code definitely won't be a thing anymore. It'll simply become the new normal for how you approach building a product. I also think that the current gap between no-code platforms and infrastructure as a service platforms like AWS will be erased.